Kia ora, wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. At just 20 years old, transgender wondercon Alice Mayo Mackie has crafted a filmography that would make most seasoned professionals envious. Alice's filmography is built within a defiantly independent space that centres queer stories on screen. From 2021's short film, The Serpent's Nest, to the run of genre-defying horror and sci-fi feature films that includes 2021's So Vam, 2022's Bad Girl Boogie, 2023's T-Blockers and Satranic Panic, yes, that's right, two feature films in 1 year, and 2024's Carnage for Christmas. Alice has showed filmmakers the possibility of independent cinema within Australia. Alice follows in the footsteps of fellow Aussie trans filmmaker Dean McLaughlin, who made a name for herself with the 2007 film The Jammed and the acclaimed series Wentworth, paving a way for fellow trans filmmakers in Australia and across the world. With her own distinct style of filmmaking, Alice has inspired and worked with fellow trans filmmakers like Vera Drew, The People's Joker, and Louise Wed, Castration Movie. Trans critic Willow Caitlin McClaig called this trio of filmmakers the three-headed hydra of edgy, dull cinema, and it's their collective filmography that is shaping what modern trans storytelling looks like in cinema. If you haven't already picked up a copy of Corpses, Fools and Monsters, The History and Future of Transness in Cinema by Willow and fellow critic Caden Mark Gardner, then please make sure to do so. I'll stick a link in the show notes where you can purchase it. It is one of the most vital books about queer cinema right now. In the following interview, Alice talks about kicking off her career as a filmmaker in Kānā, Adelaide, growing up on a diet of Buffy and keeping up appearances, while also talking about the fun of making an Australian Christmas film and working alongside non-binary actor Zaruf, who has also made a name for themselves as they help shape what Australian queer cinema looks like on screen. There's a notion of communal friendship that exists within Buffy that can also be felt in the connective thread of Alice's work. It's a foundational aspect of T-Blockers, which sees a small town overrun by parasites that turn everyday men into horrifying possessed hosts that spew literal bile, hatred, and violence, threatening the local queer community. T-Blockers is a wickedly subversive film that engages in politics and queer identity while also showing the possibilities of independent genre filmmaking. Featured in my Best Australian Films of 2024 list last year, highly recommend seeking it out. I will stick a link in the show notes as well where you can watch it. It is, like most of Alice's filmography, available on Shudder. T-Blockers will also be screening alongside Grafted at the Melbourne Women in Film Festival as part of their Almost Midnight Movie Marathon on Saturday, 22nd of March 2025. To pick up tickets, head over to mwff.org.au or check out the link in the show notes. And additionally, if you want to find out more about what we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent and free ad-free website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. If you can and you have the means to support us, then please visit patreon.com/thecurbau to support our work from as little as $1 a month. Right, here is a clip from T-Blockers, followed by my chat with Alice Mayo Mackie.
The actual fuck.
Big date. This is my first time going on a date since I started presenting.
Hi.
Hey.
She had a date with a chaser.
She had no right rejecting you like that. They should know their place.
What is it, another alt-right circle jerk?
Every skinhead and incel in town is running around with a tiny little heart on.
I don't know, they followed me.
Dead men don't rape! Dead men don't rape!
How many of them are there?
There's definitely more than us.
No harm in cracking some fascist skulls to see what's inside. Women are dying. This is my body. My body is mine, don't belong to the government. And rapists are no one free anymore.
Yeah.
never fuck with queer filmmakers.
Thank you again so much for your time and for your film work as well. I've been watching your films over the years and just been tracking how prolific you are as a filmmaker. And I guess the very, very basic question of starting off is, what kicked you into filmmaking? What was the impetus that you said, yeah, look, at the age of what, 16, was it, that you're going to jump into being a filmmaker?
Yeah, I mean, I always liked storytelling when I was younger. I used to like play a lot with Lego and stuff like that. And then I think my mom told me about this like silent film competition that was happening when I was in like in sixth grade or something like that, eighth grade maybe. And yeah, I decided to like do like a last minute like stop motion entry with Lego because me and my brother had been like working on that for a while, just like playing around. And then yeah, that got selected. And then I don't know, I just like kept writing like stories that I always like had done. And then I reached out to like some local companies for work experience during high school. And then I got on those sets and then kind of realized that, I don't know, it wasn't just storytelling. It was like filmmaking in general that was like really interested me. And then that was also like something I could do and was like an option in Adelaide.
You've always lived in Adelaide, haven't you? And always worked and made films in Adelaide.
Yeah, I moved to Sydney like 2 years ago, but I spend quite a bit of time still in Adelaide. Yeah.
Yeah. The reason why I ask is I went to Adelaide Film Festival last year for the first time in, well, first time I'd ever been to the film festival. And it was like the first time back in Adelaide in like 20 years or so, and had the best time and just was so astounded by the level of creativity that is taking place in Adelaide. And I say that like it shouldn't be a surprise because it's been the hotbed of Australian film for so long. But I imagine for you, like creative people, and I talked to a few filmmakers who are based there, who was just like having this kind of support and having an idea of what you're actually able to do in a place like Adelaide, that's got to be huge for you, especially as like an emerging filmmaker and being able to go, I can do stop motion and then shift into filmmaking. Like that's got to be exciting, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think especially like when I was younger, I mean, just like, I don't know, getting on sets in Adelaide and, you know, people think it is a small town, which it definitely is smaller compared to Sydney or Melbourne, but even like getting the opportunity to like do that, or like I got to visit, like, We Made a Thing the studios when I was, like, in, like, eighth or ninth grade, and, like, they showed me their whole post-production suite, and then worked on, like, all these, like, major blockbusters as well and VFX, and it was, like, this cool thing. It was, like, you can make these films anywhere, and these people doing it, you know.
What kind of films and TV shows did you grow up watching?
A bit of everything. I was really into, like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the film, and the TV show. Yeah, I was into, like, a lot of, like, the monsters as, like, a really young kid. Like, the 1979, like, Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys with, like, Pamela Sue Martin. I was, like, obsessed with that. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of, like, British sitcoms, like, Keeping Up Appearances as well. Are You Being Served and stuff like that when I was, like, really young just because my grandparents liked it. Yeah, I was exposed to kind of, like, a lot of different things.
Yeah. Do you find that that kind of... I mean, I don't really see the British comedy in your work, but I can see the influences of Buffy and stuff as well, like the how that kind of stuff might have impacted your creative vision. Was there any kind of through line that you feel is carrying through from like Buffy or through, you know, Keeping Up Appearances or anything like that you consciously put into your films at all?
I don't know about consciously. I think just like being exposed to like such a, like a range of like genres and like, you know, I wasn't just like watching, I don't know, like the newest thing at that time or like whatever was on like, you know, Nickelodeon and stuff. Like obviously like I liked Hannah Montana and whatever Disney Channel show was on, but then like, you know, seeing like a show from like the 70s or something is that like just seeing like the range, I don't know, and different types of like genres and like filmmaking and like even like the acting like styles back then to like now. Yeah, I think just like all those different kinds of things definitely shaped, I don't know, my work and my taste now.
Yeah, because you're like, you're a generation below me, and my interaction with TV and stuff was always like the Saturday morning Disney shows and stuff like that, and then afternoon shows in like, you know, Round the Twist and things like that. So you'd come home, or Power Rangers and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm not really sure. This is such a very kind of older millennial question, so I do apologize for that. But what was the like process for you growing up watching TV shows? Was it the similar kind of thing, Saturday morning Disney and then after school stuff, or is it like a completely different process with streaming and stuff nowadays?
Yeah, that was definitely like Saturday morning Disney, I feel. I've been like, I watched like a lot of the ABC show, and there's like one channel, 7 May, I think was that, like they showed like 70s like stuff and like the original Hulk and like Linda Carter's Wonder Woman as well, which I watched a lot of.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense then. Because I'm always like fascinated by how people get their entrance into, you know, storytelling and things. And I guess as we're shifting into like a streaming generation, it changes so differently. But then it's also about having a community and friends and saying, you know, check this out, watch this. Were you recommending things to your friends or fellow filmmakers and stuff like that growing up? Or were people saying to you, Alice, you've got to check this out as well?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like listened to a lot of people's recommendations. I mean, I wasn't really like recommending, you know, like to my like friends who are like the same age, you know, like go check out Linda Carter's like Wonder Woman. It just wasn't really something. You know, I had some friends who like watched Doctor Who and stuff like that when that was like big. But yeah.
Part of the reason why I asked this is that in following your career, basically, obviously your career then flows into the work of like Vera Drew, which is, you know, she's just a phenomenal filmmaker in herself. And she said that you're a girl who's genetically designed to make genre films. And so part of the reason I'm asking this is because it's getting an understanding of the perspective of knowing why genre films fascinate you and why they're such a foundational way of telling your stories as well. And I love that particular quote because it's a beautiful thing to be able to say that it, you know, genetically designed to make genre films. That's delightful. What does it mean to hear that from Vera?
I mean, yeah, that just like means the world, because I mean, I started before we even like worked together or became friends, I just like looked up to her as like, you know, a filmmaker, a trans woman in film who's like successful, you know. And then yeah, just like hearing that is really, I don't know, beautiful.
How did you come into Vera's orbit?
When she had the People's Joker LA premiere at Outfest 2 years ago, I want to say, I had the T-Blockers premiere, and we were both there, and we had like a mutual friend. And then we just like met at a party, and then like we're on the same film set during that time as well. Just like stayed in contact.
And I mean, the creativity that you both got going on is phenomenal. But let's continue talking about your work as well. So you've like, I'm just going to run through some of the features that you've done, and correct me if I'm wrong with what the features are as well. So you've got Boys Night, which you did a segment direction on, and then you did So Van was like your feature film debut. But I'd already seen, like, my interactions with your work already began with like Love and Blood and then Serpent's Nest as well. And then there's Bad Girl Boogie, T-Blockers, Satanic Panic, and then Carnage for Christmas, all of which are just so, like, what I love about sitting down and watching an Alice film is that I know within the first minute exactly what I'm going to, like, the style and the vibe. And it's like, yes, you're taking us on a journey and a delight. That's a huge amount of work in a short period of time as well. And I guess I want to kind of ask a really blunt question of like, what's it like to be able to have such a brilliant filmography in such a short period of time? Are you getting rest? are you looking after yourself?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's not really something like I consciously like set out to do. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I have to make so many films in this like span of time. I feel like it was mainly like the first one, So Van, I made when I was 16. I just like done a few shorts. It was like during or just like after like Adelaide's like big COVID lockdown and stuff. So I don't know. I just like felt it was like a really weird time to like be growing up and like just like seeing the world. And I was like, well, if I want to make a film, like why not now? And then Bad Girl Boogie, that was like a year after I crowdfunded it. It was pretty small. And then T-Blockers, I just like written after Bad Girl Boogie, and I was like, we should just make it. And then Satanic Panic wasn't supposed to be like that year as well, but then like the two actors I wanted, like it just like worked for their scheduling. And yeah, it just kind of like happened like that. And I've always like felt like a passion and like need to like create films. Like, if I didn't want to, like, make, I wouldn't have, like, done it. It wasn't, like, an outside pressure, or, like, you know, it was purely because I just, like, felt the need and, like, want to tell these stories at that particular moment in time.
You're already on the radar for a lot of people, but T-Blockers really feels like the one that has pushed you into a wider global consciousness, which has put the focus on your earlier work. And by earlier, I mean, I'm literally talking like a year or two. So it's not like, you know, that that much early. But nonetheless, like T-Blockers pushes you out into a wider sphere. What was that like, knowing that a film like that, which is so... I mean, I just love it. I've watched it a few times and I think it's just a wickedly fun film. And I can feel that Buffy influence on there as well. But what's it like knowing that has, you know, getting onto a global stage, being able to interact with people like Vera, having a whole different audience, it's outside of Australia, I guess, paying focus and attention onto your work?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I don't know, crazy just like thinking about it. Like when I like wrote it, just like in my bedroom, and then like filming it, you know, it was like seven or 8 days, you know, during like June in 2022. I don't know, like I obviously like I wanted the film to do well, but like that wasn't why I was making it, especially at the time. I was like, a film called T-Blockers, it's like no budget, you know, we don't have any like names. You know, I was really just making that film because it's something I felt passionately about. It was very personal, and it was also like, I love Sovem and Bad Girl Boogie, but those were like different stages of like my life and also like my transition. So like having T-Blockers be my first film with a trans protagonist, and that film was like kind of being my biggest film yet, I don't know, it was like really special to me. Yeah.
And I imagine as well, like you, as he's saying, like it's the first one that's got a trans protagonist. You're exploring some things that almost feel like you are one of the first people in Australian film. There's exploring trans stories from a trans perspective, putting it on screen in a way that is just, like, feels revolutionary. Do you feel like you're revolutionary, or that's not even like in your mindset as you're writing these films? Are you just, you're wanting to do something that you want to do for yourself or for the wider queer community?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like think about it, like, you know, when people bring up, you know, me and Vera and like Jane and this like trans like movement and film stuff and like that, like that's incredible, and I feel like very grateful that people even talking about that work in the broader context. But you know, I really wasn't thinking about that, and I'm still not, like, you know, I was like 17 writing this film. It wasn't like I was like, oh, I'm gonna like, you know, write it for someone else or like write it to like change perspectives. It was just like I wanted this like personal fun mix with like a genre aspect, and just like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, which I guess makes sense, right? And I wonder then for you, the outside noise, like when you get people like myself and other, you know, critical people saying, you know, this is great, you're doing X, Y, and Z, does that feed into what you're doing as a filmmaker, or are you just more interested in making the films itself and then letting them speak for itself and do what they need to do?
Yeah, I mean, like, the outside, like, you know, stuff, like, means a lot, and, like, the reception is, like, great. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't really influence like my next film per se. Like I don't know, I kind of stick to doing what I want to do and then like making that film, especially, you know, I'm not working with these massive budgets, and, you know, T-Blockers, you know, that was a film that I, you know, a lot of people would maybe have like recommended things differently and stuff like that. And I just stuck to my vision and like the story that I wanted to tell, and like it did the best. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. I think just like sticking to my vision at the moment.
Yeah. I want to talk about as well, one of the people who you've worked with as a co-writer, which is Benjamin Pyle Robinson. And I'm curious what the creative process is like for you both in writing. What's that relationship like together in being able to get these stories ready for screen?
Yeah, I mean, I've been working with him since like my very like first like short film, like when I was 14 and stuff. Like it's been, you know, crazy that it's been this long now. But yeah, I think we're just like so in sync with, you know, we have like same inspirations, but like also he's got different inspirations and I have got different ones. So then like when we come together, it's just like, I don't know, they just like kind of fit perfectly. And then, yeah, I mean, typically I'll like come to him with an idea sometimes in like narrative form, or like I've written scenes out in like a narrative way. And then we just like go back and forth from it. But yeah, I think I met him through this like local production I did work experience on when I was 14, and the DOP was like, you'd really like get along with this writer. But yeah.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, and that's the thing, is like you never really know who you're going to be able to meet and bounce into and what the collaboration and work is going to be like. It's been great to be able to see you both creatively work together. I know that he recently posted on Blue Sky about moving back to Adelaide and making a film there. So I'm excited to see what he wants to do. Has he done directing? I should have checked this beforehand, but is he mostly a writer and then moving into directing?
He's definitely directed a few short films before, but I think when he moved overseas, I think he just was writing more over there because I still haven't met him in person because he moved right before, like I was in LA on that production and he like moved overseas during that time. So yeah.
Wow. What's that like then?
I don't know. It's like kind of like the perfect working relationship, but it just like works so well. Like the time difference is like the only thing, I guess, it's been, you know, a bit troublesome, but yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's weird being so creatively in sync with someone, I guess, but like, you know, never meeting them, but I guess it kind of feels like I have in a way.
That's almost like the way that you are having to collaborate with other filmmakers as well around the world, because you've got people who are based in America or in Europe or whatever, and I imagine for a lot of them, like unless you're actually attending the same film festival, you're not physically meeting them in person, but you're still building a community, which is the value of having a community online. You kind of touched on it, but that creative process then of working together, I know that Vera was the... What did she do? The editing on Carnage for Christmas, is that right? And so you worked together for that. Were you in the same room? Was that online? How did that process work?
Yeah, it was like purely online. We'd shot the film in Adelaide. And then, yeah, I had like a couple like references that I wanted her to see before she started like editing. And then, yeah, it was like mostly just like back and forth, long emails or like phone calls.
Yeah, part of the reason why I keep on bringing up Vera, of course, is obviously you've collaborated so much, but I love Willow Caitlin McClay's comment about yourself, Vera, and Louise Weird, where she calls you all the three-headed hydra of edgy doll cinema, and which is one heck of a title for three great filmmakers. And when you first heard that name for you three, What was your immediate reaction? What did you feel?
I don't know. It's like very special to share that with like two other people who are like my close friends and like filmmakers, you know, I really am inspired by. And we actually have like a group chat under that same name that we text quite often. So yeah, it's just really cool.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I've read Willow's work for a long time, and then I picked up her book, which is just a wonderful book to read. And just getting a dive into how she sees the world and trend cinema is great. But then also, I mean, as you probably know, like I focus predominantly on Australian film. So it's really beautiful to be able to see somebody internationally spend time and dedication to supporting an Australian filmmaker. And I guess for you, like you might be balancing the mindset of being an Australian filmmaker. Does that come into your perspective at all? Or just like you want to just create stories and tell them, and the Australianness of it doesn't even factor into it at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely like some Australianisms that like creep into my work, and like obviously with the settings and stuff like that, I try and keep it pretty, I don't know, ambiguous. But yeah, like given like a lot of like the money like for my films is like coming from like America, it doesn't really, you know, like I'm not like I'm working with like a lot of Australian companies in terms of like that side of things.
Yeah. Has there been much resistance or I guess financial support in that regard from an Australian perspective? I have heard from some queer storytellers and filmmakers here in Australia that it's been really difficult to get funding support from funding bodies and stuff like that. Have you encountered that experience at all yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I know like there have been like a couple like, I don't know, new people like stepping up into like roles and like, you know, in the companies and stuff like that. So I don't know like about like recently over the last 6 months, but I definitely like had some like meetings, you know, earlier on, and I don't know if they were the most like progressive or not like in a malicious way, but just like I think in an ignorant way. I think, you know, they're very used to traditional things and like films and mindsets and the people they meet, which weren't great. And I know people have had issues with like funding genre films and stuff like that, but I think, I don't know, that's starting to change a little.
Yeah, I would hope so. With like the success of like Late Night with the Devil and Talk to Me, you'd kind of hope that the attention for genre films is, and the respect, I guess, that should come with them, should hopefully be changing. Well, I really hope so as well, because I guess one of the things we've always made is really great genre films, and they've been quite subversive, and they've been commented on politics and stuff like that. Not all of them need to, but it's often a place to be able to explore that. Is that something that you enjoy about using genre as a style of filmmaking, to be able to comment on society or trends or politics or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like not something I want to do like with all of my films. Like the one it's in post at the moment, it's like it is like a very queer film, but it's not really that political outside of just like featuring queer and trans people. But like with T-Blockers as well, I don't know, it was kind of perfect to like blend the genres, because if I made it like a drama, I don't know, like that would have been like really beautiful, and a lot of people like those elements where it's just like a hangout film. But I don't know, there's like not really a catharsis there, you know. If it's like there's just like shitty like men and conservative people, it's like if it was a drama, I'm not gonna have them just like straight up kill these like, I don't know, fascists and stuff like that. So like adding the horror element in it just like really means I can just portray them as like this grossest, I don't know, like really just vulgar entities, and like have them like be like killed and just like, yeah, stuff like that, which I really like.
Yeah. And I mean, as you're saying, like there's a line, right? You can't just kill people on screen. You've got to have them being possessed or something like that, which makes the audience in particular be able to enjoy those deaths a little bit more. And that's why, I mean, certainly some audience would particularly enjoy seeing people killed regardless, but I, you know, I'm neither here nor there. But it's a delightful film in the way that you actually present them as these grotesque, horrible, really conservative creatures, and just having the goop coming out of their mouths. Can you talk about that process of designing what they would actually look like in their worst state?
Yeah, I really think it was just like taking it to like the most extreme that we could have while still looking like humans. It's like, yeah, especially just really wanting to get that, this like, I don't know, creepiness, and just, I don't know, almost like alien-like in the way they're just like beastly and just really foul, and just like, especially like with the goop and stuff, just making it like just as far out as possible.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about some of the cast people that you've worked with as well. I know you've worked with Zarif a couple of times, and I love seeing them on screen. What's it like working with Zarif on films?
Yeah, I love it. It was really special because I was at the Sydney Film Festival a while ago now for Lonesome, Craig Borum's film. And he's like one of my favorite Australian directors. And I think that film was really beautiful. And that's where I was first introduced to them and the work. And then I just saw that film and then messaged them after. And yeah, that's been really special collaborating a couple times after being such a big fan of that film. Genuinely, it's like one of my favorite Australian films. So yeah.
I mean, I love what Craig does. Craig's such a great filmmaker, and being able to kind of put queer stories on screen in a way that is so just wonderful. Like I remember talking to him for Lonesome and just being excited by the fact of getting to like the real minute things of seeing, you know, people peeing on screen and stuff like that. Like we don't get to see that in Australian cinema. And so I celebrated him, like applauded him for that, because it's just like boundary pushing in enjoyable, exciting ways that I think I love to be able to see. But then also presenting and putting somebody like Zarif, you know, as a co-lead for that film, is just, it's great to be able to discover these brilliant new talents. What's it like knowing that you're working kind of not in the shadow, but like having somebody like Craig out there as a filmmaker, as a queer filmmaker, and bring queer stories on screen? That's got to be exciting, and knowing that there's kind of somebody who's already led a path, even though the genre stylistically might not be the same, but you're working in similar wheelhouses. How important is it to have somebody like Craig there as somebody to look up to or reach out to for support or guidance?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. And he's like such a sweet guy as well. And I watched Teenage Kicks, you know, when that first came out when I was a lot younger. I didn't really put two and two, like, you know, that he was just like Australian filmmaker, just like living, you know, life and stuff like that. But yeah, I think I love his films a lot. And despite, you know, the differences in like genre and stuff, especially with like Lonesome, I love the way that it's like explicit in nature, but it doesn't feel like it's just like pushing boundaries to push boundaries. It's genuinely like sitting there and watching that film, you know, in the State Theater at the Sydney Film Festival. It was just such a beautiful experience. Like, it's just such a raw film, and especially, you know, him doing these films on indie budgets, and also like doing, you know, these, I don't know, just having such a wide appeal is really, I don't know, inspiring.
I mean, as you mentioned, like getting to see a film like Lonesome in a major theater at Sydney is quite something. But then getting to see your film like Carnage for Christmas and at the Adelaide Film Festival, what does that mean to be able to have a major film festival then spotlight your work in this way?
Yeah, I mean, it's so special, and it's always like unexpected, like despite, I don't know, you know, a film doing well to me or like getting like some like nice reception, every time like that happens, it's still like a nice welcome surprise, you know, especially like with Acme in Melbourne. I feel like they've been like, they're playing T Blockers again for like the second or third time, and that's just like crazy to me. Like, I used to like go to Acme as a kid all the time when I was like visiting Melbourne, and just to be like, oh, like it's just playing my film, you know, not once but like a second or third time, is just so surreal and really, really special.
Yeah, I mean, like, we keep on highlighting T Blockers, but there's something special about that film, and it almost feels like it's going to, a lot of your work has become cult work in a lot of ways, but T Blockers in particular feels like a midnight movie kind of thing that you want to just lose yourself in. Do you feel that from your perspective, it's stepping into that? Like, I know that Vinegar Syndrome put out some really luscious, beautiful physical media sets off it, of your work, which is, you know, helps elevate it into that level. But do you feel it stepping into the world of cult cinema? Is that an area that you're comfortable with a film like T-Blockers moving into?
Yeah, definitely. I would love that. I mean, especially with Vinegar Syndrome, and I don't know, like, I've received like fan art and stuff, which is like mind blowing that someone would like take time to like, you know, make art based off one of my films. I mean, I went to Brisbane last year for Carnage for Christmas, and like some people like brought like DVDs for me to sign and stuff. And that was just such like a, I don't know, a really beautiful and just like insane experience. Cause I just was not, you know, I just never think of a film, I don't know, like that to someone else. It's just really, yeah, crazy.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, it's an inspiration, right? And I know that seems like it's a cheesy word to use, inspiration, but you are guiding and leading a new generation of Australian filmmakers who go, I didn't realize this was possible. Have you met people at Q&A sessions or at, you know, film festivals who have said that to you, like what you've been able to do has helped guide us into saying that we can actually make what we want to do on screen?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't really have the words to describe how much that means to me. Like, not only like they like are moved by my work, but it's moved them to like create their own work or inspire them to like write something. Yeah, it's just, yeah, really beautiful.
I'd love to shift over to talking about not a film that you directed, but a film that you are part of in a big way, which is Castration Movie, which has grown into being something quite brilliant in itself, and the reactions that I've seen online for it have been really great. It feels like one of those underground films that people discover in a way, like back in the 90s, I used to, you know, if there was an underground film, we'd be sharing it on VHS or we'd be sharing it on a burnt DVD or something like that. And this feels like that kind of thing where people are discovering it and saying, you must seek it out. I'm curious what it's like to be part of a film like that and part of working in the orbit of Louise and, you know, being able to have Castration Movie is something that you're part of in some way.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I'm just like so happy that it's like receiving this kind of attention. Like, I know how hard she's like been working on this for a while now. And yeah, it's really weird. Like, I've had like a few people message me about like my scene, because like it was screening at the Roxy yesterday, and I was like, that's just so crazy. Like, I don't like act at all, really, and I've only acted twice, both for Louise, that film, and like another one that was quite big that she produced last year in Canada. I did a small like cameo for her. But yeah, we shot at the same time. I met Vera. And yeah, I mean, it's really special. It's like resonating a lot with people. Yeah, I'm just like so glad how like 5-hour, you know, masterpiece is actually playing in cinemas. You know, I think it sold out in Melbourne and they added another screening. It's just like really, I don't know, special to see that continue to like bloom and like just like have this cool cinematic almost like mystery, like run underground. Yeah.
Mm. It's exciting. And I know she's hard at work on, was it part two is what she's called it? Or yeah. Is it just cast? Yeah. Oh, I'm excited. as soon as the Kickstarter link for it went up, I was like, I've got to support that in some way because I love the first one. I'm so excited to see what will happen in the second one. But it's wonderful to see. And I didn't realize that it sold out in Melbourne as well. I was so envious because I was just over in Melbourne a week before the screening was on and I was itching to go and see it in the cinema. To see it alongside people would have been great. But the mood and the vibe would have been phenomenal. So it's wonderful to hear that it did sell out and there was a whole bunch of people there. With that, it's like Vera, yourself, Louise, you know, there is this change of how trans stories are being told on screen nowadays. They're told from within the community rather from outside of the community. How have you felt the shift for trans cinema from within side, from your own perspective of being able to tell trans stories from your perspective and from a community's perspective? Do you feel like the way that people are talking about trans cinema is changing or the stories that are being told on trans cinema are changing?
I don't know. I think a big part of it is like social media for sure. Like genuinely, like these films are doing like really well. And like, especially Vera's, like that really broke through to like a lot of people, which is amazing. But like a lot of like the trans community and queer community are really like speaking about these films. And I think pushing them to like get the word out there, especially like with castration film and like, you know, my work, a lot of it is like word of mouth, you know, there's not like a big marketing budget or like the biggest festivals in the world. So I think it's just the way people are talking about it and like online and like, you know, with Willow's book and stuff like that. I think, I don't know, a lot of people are finding ways to talk about these films and express themselves and like talk about art differently. Because I still think the way like cis people mainly, I don't know, interact with these films, you know, is like less than, you know, other independent films they would just go see. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I certainly feel that myself as well. Like as a cis person, I find it frustrating that my fellow critics don't want to engage or I feel there might be a sense that they're afraid of not knowing what to use of the right terminology and stuff. And it's like, to me, the logical thing is just either listen, read, or, you know, pay attention to how people within the community are talking and say things respectfully. In your perspective, what would be, I hate asking this because it's such a silly question to ask members of the community, but what would be your recommendation for people, cisgender people who are writing about your films or trans cinema? What would you recommend that they do before they even start writing about it?
You know, I think just like, I don't know, like basic reading, you know, I feel like, especially a couple of cis people with T-Buckers, you know, when it came to like some terminology in the film, because I didn't want to explain it to people, like that was never my intention. So they would watch it and, you know, they might be a bit confused. But then I've like read some pieces where like the journalist or like reviewer takes it upon themselves to like look it up. And like, I appreciate that because it's not just being like, oh, they like use these words and I didn't understand that. And like that annoyed me because it's like, well, that's like a different culture, you know, it's like you shouldn't, I don't know, like automatically maybe wouldn't know these words, but it's like it doesn't take long to like look up the context of something. And at the end of the day, I'm never going to really like, I don't know, get upset unless like the intent is really like malicious, you know. I've had like interviews with like, you know, a lot of like older American guys, you know, in the Midwest or something and like living in a red state, and maybe their terminology isn't always like the most correct or like up to date, but they're coming from a place of, you know, good intent and like they like the film, and then it like spoke to them and introduced them to like a different world or like seeing a trans person on screen. They probably wouldn't have even seen that before, especially in the horror genre as well. It gives more people to like to seek out the film. So yeah.
With that in mind as well, I guess aligning trans cinema, I guess, with the black cinema of the 70s, blaxploitation era cinema, I'm not saying they're exactly the same, but there is, blaxploitation era films were certainly driven by a sense of resistance for storytelling and filmmaking, as a lot of different styles of filmmaking have been over the years. Do you see trans filmmaking as a form of resistance?
I don't know. I mean, I definitely like, especially like in the political time we're living in, it's just like a trans person, you know, in any film, whether it's made by like a cis person or like a trans person, I think, you know, that's just incredible, playing a trans or cis role. You know, I think it's just really special in these times, and that's like not activism, but it's just like, I don't know, it's just really special to see that.
It's got to be also frustrating, I imagine, as well, to continually having to talk about politics in relation to a trans identity. Like, that's got to be really, really frustrating and shit. How do you manage that? What do you deal? How do you deal with kind of shutting that off in some way?
I really think it depends on, like, I don't know, the circumstances surrounding why I'm like being asked to talk about it. You know, like, for instance, you know, I'm really like loving this conversation, but you know, if it was like, I don't know, someone else, I don't know, I guess it just depends on where they're coming from, or if they're like, you know, like sometimes they'll ask me questions like about like trans people in sport or whatever, and I'm like, that's not related. I didn't make a film about trans people in sport. I didn't make a film about trans people using bathrooms or something like that. So I don't really want to be asked about that. Like, I'm a filmmaker, not an activist first and foremost. You know, I feel like in instances, you know, I'm really like lucky Shutter has taken, you know, my films on, but I think sometimes, you know, it's introduced to like a wider audiences, you know, I've received like death threats and like, you know, stuff like that. A lot of, you know, like review bombing and things like that before the films come out, and a lot of like, you know, crazy messages. And where I feel like I don't mind speaking about that experience, because it's like, I want things to change, or, you know, the platform to like be better and like protect the creators if they're going to platform them to a larger audience.
With that in mind as well, like Carnage for Christmas, I want to talk about the Christmas aspect of it, because as much as, you know, trans stories aren't really told in Australian cinema, neither are Christmas stories. And so I particularly want to ask about what it means to be able to portray Christmas on screen in some capacity, and to be able to, you know, present a form of Christmas from an Australian perspective on screen. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, going into that, I don't know, I was really inspired by, like, I don't know, shows like Columbo and like the original Nancy Drew and stuff like that. So I guess for me, I wanted this film, I don't know, to take place at a, like, for a reason why the character would like return home, you know, during just whatever time period. So Christmas is like the perfect time to like creatively do something different, you know, within a different sort of genre, have like an Australian Christmas while also like, you know, having a reason for this like character to come back, and then also providing, you know, the perfect kind of like legend and like design, and just like really amping up the Christmas elements as well.
It's got to be a lot of fun working in like a Christmas style as well. I can feel that you're having so much fun working with that on screen there. What was it like to shoot that particular film?
Yeah, I mean, we shot it in August of 2023. But yeah, it was really cool. Obviously, like, it was a few months out from Christmas, and like, so stepping onto like, you know, sets with like full Christmas trees and like wreaths and stuff like that, that was really cool. And then, yeah, I don't know, it was a lot of fun to just like play around with that, especially like in the editing as well, you know, with like the dance of like Sugar Plum Fairy like remix, you know, and playing with that music and stuff like that. Yeah.
Which then I guess leads me into talking about one of the events that you've got coming up, which is the Melbourne Women in Film Festival. What's it like being part of that particular, and what are you looking forward to for people attending the events that are going on there for that particular festival?
Yeah, I mean, I love this festival. I think it's last year, I had a film play there as well, and I was able to attend, which was really special. I mean, T-Buckers is playing with Grafted, which is like directed by a woman in genre, and I really love that film. It's like gnarly, and I saw it in a cinema. I honestly felt quite like sick watching it in like the best possible way. Yeah, and it's just really also special, I guess, to like be in a women in film festival without, you know, having the word trans or something, you know, at the, I don't know, as an asterisk or whatever. It's just they put this film in, you know, and that's really special, and I really appreciate them highlighting, you know, trans women in the festival as well.
Like you, I saw Grafted, and unfortunately I didn't get to watch it in a cinema, but I also did feel a bit, you know, it does curdle you in a way, which is interesting. And I think I know that they compare it to, it's like Mean Girls meets Face Off in some regard. So it is a delightful kind of genre film in that regard. You've kind of already touched on it, but having a double like that has got to be exciting, to know that your work is then going to be in conversation with somebody else's film in some ways. Do you think about it that way? Like when your film is screened alongside somebody else's film or as part of a festival, that people might take the notions or the ideas that are in one film and then think about it in relationship to the film that it's paired with, like with Grafted?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool. I don't think I've ever played like a double feature per se, like, you know, on the same night. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited for those conversations. I think just like looking at a film within different contexts, especially now that T-Buckers has been out, you know, for a little bit on like streaming and stuff like that, to see it in a cinema in the context of like having this like film as well, I think is really cool.
Let's focus on then what you're doing next, because you are so prolific. I imagine you've already got another film on the go or something like that. Will you always shoot in Australia? Is the intention to kind of head overseas and shoot overseas as well, possibly?
Yeah, I mean, I have a film in post at the moment that Vera's been editing. It's like my biggest film. It's still a very small budget, but it's like the biggest budget that I've ever worked with, which is really cool. I got to work with some international talents as well as like Scott Major from like Heartbreak High and stuff, which was really fun. And that's what I think was supposed to be wrapping up in like 2 weeks on post-production. I'm really excited about that. And yeah, I mean, I like filming in Australia, specifically Adelaide. I don't know, because it's like small enough where it's like, it doesn't feel like, you know, shooting a film in Sydney and like going across, you know, all these like different places and the traffic and all that kind of vibe. But it's like still a big city and the crews here are fantastic and I really love them and I love being able to bring in, you know, talent from interstate and internationally while also using talent in Adelaide. Yeah, I really love it. I would love to shoot in like Canada because I think it's very beautiful at some point. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, like I thought that Adelaide was just phenomenal. It's turned into this, I'd say this turned into like it was an ugly duckling or something like that. But it is a beautiful, beautiful city and just... it was really nice to be able to spend time there and surrounded with a form of creativity, which I don't feel in Melbourne or Sydney or even in Perth where I live. Like I was surprised by the amount of art that is just everywhere in strange ways. Like there was a church which had these little art pieces that some of the people or students had made there, and you could just, if you left a dollar, you could take it from the fence and stuff like that. And then there's part of, I think it's Rundle Mall, where there's coins in the street and all this kind of, this different kind of creativity, which just felt like it was part of the actual structure of the city. And I'm curious, like, it's such a vague question, but do you feel that when you go to Adelaide, like being surrounded by all this kind of art and different kinds of creativity, what does that mean to be able to be surrounded by that in a city like Adelaide?
Yeah, I think honestly, I kind of had to step away from Adelaide, you know, when I moved to Sydney, to like really appreciate, I don't know, like how beautiful the city is. Like obviously, like growing up with it, I don't know, it kind of just felt small, but like, I don't know, then coming back to it, I don't know, it's really amazing. And, you know, we've got people like Sophie Hyde, who's like been one of my favorite filmmakers for a long time. You know, she still films here as well as internationally and like brings talent over here. And I think, you know, that's kind of, I don't know, career path that I love to see, where it's like you can shoot here while working with other people and like, you know, having films premiere at these big festivals. And I think that's just, you know, the perfect kind of, I don't know, Adelaide artist to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Sophie's, she's an inspiration, and the collaborative work that she does, as you're saying, like bring talent overseas to Adelaide as well is great, but then also nurturing and supporting other filmmakers too. It's vital, a bit like Craig, having somebody like that in the film industry who recognises that you need to support new talent coming up. And you'll be in that space. I'm sure you're probably in that space already of mentoring and guiding people. Do people come to you for that? I've kind of asked you that already, but do people come to you as like, Alice, can you mentor me in this or give me tips on how to do this or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, no, I don't know about mentoring, but I definitely get like messages or people coming up to me after screenings, you know, asking things, which, yeah, it's really sweet that they even want my advice to begin with. But yeah.
Well, I mean, you're a great filmmaker, and it's been a delight to be able to talk with you about your work. And no doubt in you know, a year or two, and you've got even more feature films under your belt. Like, and I would love to be able to talk with you again and reflect on where you go as a filmmaker and what you do and how you grow and what kind of stories you want to tell. Because I love it whenever a new Alice film comes out, because again, I know what I'm going to get, but I also don't know what I'm going to get. And that was the delight of being able to watch T-Blockers and then watching Carnage for Christmas. It's just like these two similar films, but different in some ways. So I'm excited to see where you go as a filmmaker. It's been a delight to be able to talk with you. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for your work as well. I applaud everything you do. It's great.
Thank you so much. It's been so lovely getting to talk to you.
Hey, thanks for listening to this chat with Alice Mayomaki about her filmography and her work as a trans filmmaker in Australia. For other interviews, visit thecurb.com.au. If you're in Naarm, Melbourne, then check out T-Blockers on Saturday, 22nd of March, alongside Grafted for the Almost Midnight Movie Marathon at the Melbourne Women in Film Festival. MWFF.org.au is where you get tickets. I'll see you on the next one.